coronavirus ravages communities of color and cracks in the military. Is it Vietnam all over again? With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with some of the news for Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. And the race for the Democratic Party nomination to face off against President Donald Trump in November is becoming a one-man show as Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders suspended his campaign today.
I wish I could give you better news, but I think you know the truth. And that is that we are now some 300 delegates behind Vice President Biden, and the path toward victory is virtually impossible. So while we are winning the ideological battle, and while we are winning the support of so many young people and working people throughout the country, I have concluded that this battle for the Democratic nomination will not be successful. And so today, I am announcing the suspension of my campaign. Let me also say this. I will stay on the ballot in all remaining states and continue to gather delegates. While Vice President Biden will be the nominee, we must continue working to assemble as many delegates as possible at the Democratic convention, where we will be able to exert significant influence over the party platform and other functions. This race has never been about me. I ran for the presidency because I believe that as a president, I could accelerate and institutionalize the progressive changes that we are all building together. And if we keep organizing and fighting, I have no doubt but that that is exactly what will happen. On a very personal note, speaking for Jane, myself, and our entire family, we will always carry in our hearts the memory of the extraordinary people we have met across this country. We often hear about the beauty of America, and this country is incredibly beautiful. But to me, the beauty I will remember most is in the faces of the people we have met from one corner of this nation to the other. The compassion, love, and decency I have seen in them makes me so hopeful for our future. It also makes me more determined than ever to work to create a nation that reflects those values and lifts up all of our people. Please stay in this fight with me. Let us go forward together. The struggle continues. Thank you all very much.
Sanders' departure from the race comes a day after the state of Wisconsin went forward with a controversial in-person election, which Sanders had called to be postponed. Following a popular vote win in Iowa, a win in New Hampshire, and a decisive victory in Nevada, Sanders had been the front runner for the nomination, but his chances collapsed with a crushing defeat in South Carolina, where the dean of the state party, Representative Jim Clyburn, gave an impassioned endorsement to former Vice President Joe Biden. Sanders had raised more money than Biden and gathered more support among young voters, but Biden had the support of party moderates. Despite Sanders' apparent loss, there is one progressive voice left in the campaign, although a long shot. The presumptive Green Party nominee, Howie Hawkins, says it's the Democrats who spoiled the race, and it's time for Sanders supporters to go green.
Bernie earned millions of votes supporting programs like Medicare for All, Green New Deal, and an Economic Bill of Rights. And the only way to keep fighting for those reforms and more is to support the green ticket right through the November election and beyond. Biden is not for any of those programs. He has a nominal Green New Deal program, but it's a joke. My reaction is I invite Sanders supporters to keep fighting for those programs through my campaign, and we're fighting for our future. We have to keep the revolution alive. Joe Biden is not the vehicle.
What do you feel to those who might criticize your campaign as taking votes away from the Democrats at a time when they need to beat Trump?
The Democrats are spoiling this election. Since they started whining about the Green Party in 2000 when Ralph Nader ran, we gave them the answer to the spoiler problem, and that is get rid of the Electoral College and go to a ranked choice national popular vote. They've never got behind that. Instead, they pick on the Greens. So it's them that's spoiling the election because there's a solution to the spoiler problem. And if we're not in the race, that solution's not even going to be raised.
How many states are you going to be on? Do you expect to be on in November?
We expect to be on all 51 ballots, 50 states and the District of Columbia. We're on 22 now. With this coronavirus lockdown, physical petitioning is untenable. So we're in the process of appealing to the leadership of the states for relief from those petitions. And if we don't get relief, we're taking him to court. We've already taken him to court in Illinois. So we're fighting to get on every ballot in the country.
Right. And how could people find out more about your campaign?
They should go to my website, HowieHawkins.us, www.HowieHawkins.us.
And that's Green Party candidate Howie Hawkins. Meanwhile, Tuesday's Wisconsin primary went on despite a bitter fight over voting in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. Many poor and black voters in Milwaukee, the state's biggest city, confronted their fears and risked contracting the deadly disease to get out to vote. The conservative-leaning state Supreme Court declined to delay the election despite a statewide order from the Democratic governor telling people to stay home and avoid crowds to contain the spread of the disease. Milwaukee, where roughly 4 in 10 residents are black, has suffered roughly half the state's coronavirus deaths. Officials closed all but 5 of the city's 180 polling places, forcing thousands of voters to congregate at only a handful of voting sites. A senior poll watcher is Dr. Kwaku Ramel-Smith. He says yesterday's vote wasn't about politics, but survival. He joins us from Milwaukee.
This is not a struggle along lines of ideology and just pure differences. This gets to a point now because of the election yesterday. Where we're literally costing people their health and could be their lives.
How did this come to be?
In a municipality of Milwaukee, 180 polling sites was reduced to 5. So we knew that there would be chaos. We knew that there would be pandemonium. We knew that there was not enough PPE for those who would serve and who would work. We knew being in a pandemic that all would not have masks, all would not practice social distancing. And so in a place where this virus is unknown to us, it's an invisible enemy, would have the ability to spread and not only not flatten the curve, but increase the curve. So we thought that cooler heads would prevail and that the election would be postponed, or at least absentee balloting and home voting to allow people to not lose the right to vote, to be able to voice their opinion, but to do it in a safe capacity. However, the Supreme Court, by a vote of 4-2, decided that they did want to have the election to go on as possible, putting many, many people throughout the state at risk, but specifically those in Milwaukee, Dane County, where we've seen an enormous concentration of the cases. Some people who applied to absentee vote did not get theirs in time, so they had to make a choice to whether stay in line and possibly get infected by a virus or to not vote at all. For the people who did the absentee voting, there was a period of time where they had scratched the ability to have witnesses because of the virus, and some people were living alone, some people were quarantined. But within that 24 hours, they changed it. So as of today, we know for a fact that 750 ballots have been spoiled and ranked as invalid because people who were told that they could send in an absentee ballot with no signature, no witness signature, are now telling them that they needed it based on the U.S. Supreme Court action to deny the length to get in on the 13th. And so we have people who have been disenfranchised. On yesterday, April 7th, we had tons of story of people not being allowed to vote, people waiting in lines that was exceedingly long. When you try to fit 180 polling places into 5, you're going to have chaos. You're going to have pandemonium. And so a lot of people were rejected their right to vote. A lot of people were sent to the wrong site. And the sad part about it, Paul, is I don't think we're going to feel the true reverberations of this until a few weeks to a month, where we start to see the people who were infected and we see people come down with severe sickness and health infiltrating and overflooding our hospitals. And unfortunately, an inordinate amount of deaths that could have been prevented.
President waited on this, claiming that people were getting together in living rooms to fraudulently sign ballots. What's your reaction to the president's statements?
We see a man who at the federal level had the ability to ease all of this and create rules that would affect all 50 states, but instead left it up to the governor's understanding that it would cause and create chaos and havoc. There has absolutely been no history of that type of fraudulent act here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They have said that these are unprecedented times. So for unprecedented times, I think we need to recognize we need to do things different than what we've done in the past. Wisconsin has tried to be progressive and safe to protect the citizenry, but we put politics and profits over people as usual. He endorsed Judge Daniel Kelly, who is currently on the Wisconsin Supreme Court and who leans heavily as a Republican. And he wanted to do anything that would shift the balances to keep him in power. So he did endorse Justice Kelly, and he did send his input in to make sure that the Wisconsin Supreme Court voted to allow the election to go, because they knew by doing things the way they did that it would hurt communities that had more of a Democratic, more of a liberal leaning.
We're not even allowed to know who won this election for a couple of weeks now.
This is the absolute insanity part about it. So I've worked the polls on a regular basis. I've worked it before voter ID, which is another form of suppression, voter suppression. I've worked it afterwards. But when we did that, we took pride in getting our votes counted, taking our votes, taking our bag down to the offices. So electronically it could be counted, but then that the follow-up paperwork could be counted, and that we had those elections results in the night of the election. Here, we will not have our election results until April 13th, which is almost, well, it is 7 days away. And who knows, when we talk about fraudulent voter operations, what will be done to those ballots all across the state, what will happen. It's a lot of different irregularities. It's a lot of different things going on that's normally not done. And I have a hard feeling that we're going to see a lot of lawsuits. So we're going to see a lot of different other things, because even when the results are in, those won't be the final results, because they will be contested heavily by anybody who loses because of the irregularities presented in this specific election.
Senior poll watcher Dr. Kwaku Rammell-Smith in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Milwaukee is the site of the Democratic National Convention scheduled for this August. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo reported more than 700 coronavirus-related deaths in the state for a second day in a row, but he added a ray of good news. Social distancing seems to be flattening the curve. Speaking in Albany, Cuomo said 779 patients died Tuesday, the highest number of deaths in a single day. He also ordered flags across the state to be flown at half-mast for the dead. Cuomo says the numbers would likely rise again in days if people let down their guard and stop following social distancing rules. But as more data is collected on who's getting sick and dying, the results are a disturbing reminder of the gap in care for rich and poor. Mayor Bill de Blasio spoke earlier today of the emerging evidence of racial disparity among the victims of the pandemic.
Because of COVID-19 in the city, first and foremost, have affected the Hispanic community with 34% of the deaths. That community is about 29% of all New Yorkers in terms of population. It's hard to talk about this stuff. This means human beings. This means families. The Black community, 28% of the deaths, compared to about 22% of the overall population. The white community, 27% of the deaths, compared to about 32% of the overall population. The Asian community, 7% of the deaths, compared to about 14% of the overall population. It tells us that we need to act. The first and most important element of the plan is to focus on our public hospitals in particular, because this is about the most essential concept of ensuring that everyone gets health care, regardless of their background, regardless of their zip code, regardless of their income. The second is we're going to do a major campaign to educate people, to give them more and more detailed information on how to address this crisis. There'll be a multi-million dollar ad campaign, a traditional media, digital campaign focused on communities of color, focused on communities where English is not the first language, to make sure we get much deeper into communities, including immigrant communities. Third, we're going to have to work closely with community-based clinics where there are healthcare workers that have a deep sense of their own communities, who speak the language in every sense of their own communities, who have the relationships and the trust. We're going to have to find a way to get healthcare workers out into communities to educate people, to answer their questions, to help them address their immediate challenges, but in a way that's safe for those healthcare workers. We need to find a way to get healthcare workers in a safe, smart, strategic way out into communities for direct communication with people in greatest need.
And the city's health commissioner, Oxyris Barbett, says it's evident that Trump's public charge rule targeting immigrants who ask the government for help may have become deadly.
The overlay of the anti-immigrant rhetoric across this country, I think, has real implications in the health of our community. And certainly concerns about public charge are some things that I think we need to dig deeper into it to better understand. The overall concerning aspect of this is the fact that these are communities that have had higher rates of underlying chronic illness, and that it's a reminder that these chronic underlying illnesses in peacetime, as the mayor has spoken about, contribute to higher rates of premature mortality from those chronic illnesses, but that in this particular wartime scenario are really very concerning for higher rates of mortality.
New York City's Health Commissioner Oxyris Barbett. The alarm that the disease was targeting people of color was sounded by public advocate Jumaane Williams. His warnings led to pointed questions to the mayor, who scrambled to amass statistics on the disparities in coronavirus deaths. Deputy public advocate Nick Smith says it's not racism that's directly at fault, but the effect of decades of racism that's contributing to the disparity.
The response itself may not be overtly racist, but there's a theory in law called disparate impact, which means the thing itself may not be racist or discriminatory, but the effects or the outcome is. And that's super clear in this case. Disparity in New York, thank goodness, it's not as bad as other places. You look at Michigan, Wisconsin, the places, we're talking up to 80, 75% of people of color dying from coronavirus. So while we're not that high here in New York, the disparity doesn't exist.
Aren't we supposed to get that kind of leadership from the White House?
While other places chose to act and ramp up testing, we did basically nothing at the federal level. So now we're at an embarrassing place where we still can't really test. And so when it comes to, for example, issues of data, that's part of the reason why. We still have an issue with testing. We still have an issue with PPEs, personal protective equipment. People of color are the front line workers, generally speaking. Where do they fall in this whole equation? It's a whole panoply of problems, beginning with failure of this president and the federal government to protect the American people and respond in a way that we're going to help flatten the curve. They failed.
People have mentioned that the city budget that's just been proposed and the state budget, which has already been proposed, were continuing the shortchanging of medical care that might have contributed to this.
That's true. And I know that the governor pushed through in the budget a massive cut in Medicaid. Well, if we're talking about responding to such a crisis, why are we then on the back end cutting insurance to the very people who need the help the most, those are low-income people and, of course, people of color? There's failure on many levels in government. We got to stop the tit for tat and the politicking, particularly when it comes to protecting people in terms of this this pandemic.
The situation in the jails, mostly people of color, that would,
yeah.
You know, if we have things get out of control, and they're already getting out of control from what I hear, what could happen there if they don't release some of these people?
Number one, we need to be releasing vulnerable populations and people with low level nonviolent offenses. And keep in mind, Rikers is made up of a large chunk of folks who are just accused of a crime being held there in detention. Yes, we need to keep up the pressure and keep releasing folks who are not a risk to society and who are vulnerable. That includes, again, seniors, folks over 50, folks with pre-existing medical conditions. That has to happen, because if not, Rikers will become a bigger petri dish and we'll see numbers that we can avoid if we take action right now.
Bernie Sanders has just dropped out of the race, and he was the advocate for these kind of reforms, and the public advocate in New York was a supporter of his. Your comment on that?
Bernie Sanders as a candidate inspired just millions of people across the country. I think he talked very clearly about core issues which many argue would have helped solve this thing or prevent this thing, and that includes, for example, Medicare for all. And so I think, you know, the math was increasingly clear. He saw no real path to catching the nomination. What is very true is he's helped shift what is possible in our politics. So while, for example, President Obama, many argue, did a great job in passing Obamacare, there were still many millions of folks uncovered or not covered by health insurance. Bernie presented a plan that would cover them, but, you know, the reality of the delegates are he's not going to become the nominee. We will have a robust discussion at the convention about what that platform looks like. And I guarantee you we're going to hear Medicare for All and other plans very soon.
And that's New York City Deputy Public Advocate Nick Smith. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In more local news, Senate Deputy Leader Michael Gennaris has written to Governor Cuomo requesting an executive order suspending and forgiving rents and providing support for small homeowners due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Gennaris wrote in the letter to Cuomo, despite the 90-day eviction moratorium you wisely established by executive order, 3 months of rent payments will eventually come due all at once. Those who do not have the funds for April's rent will certainly not have the ability ability to pay 3 months' worth of rent in July. Janaris added, there are numerous reports of unscrupulous landlords pressuring tenants to pay rents with monies they simply do not have due to government-ordered shutdowns. And in more COVID news, Acting Navy Secretary Thomas Maudley resigned on Tuesday, a day after leaked audio revealed he called the ousted commander of the USS Theodore Roosevelt stupid in an address to the ship's crew. At least one sailor responded with an expletive.
And he was A, too naive or too stupid to be the commanding officer of a ship like this.
Maudley's resignation comes a little more than a week after Captain Brett Crozier, the then commanding officer of the warship with a crew of 5,000, sent a memo warning of coronavirus spreading among the sailors. Crozier was cheered by sailors as he left the ship after being relieved of command. Investigative historian and journalist Gareth Porter says what occurred on the Roosevelt was both unusual and important.
The Pentagon and high-ranking military service officers have begun to have some problems with their soldiers and sailors because they are putting prime emphasis on what they call mission security or mission assurance, meaning that they would like to carry on as many of what they regard as their key missions as possible, regardless of the problem of the coronavirus pandemic. And that has created already very serious tensions between the brass, if you will, at the Pentagon, both civilian and military, and the soldiers and sailors who are having to bear the brunt of this rather strange set of choices that they've been making.
Does this reflect the military or does this reflect Donald Trump?
I think it does reflect Trump in the sense that Trump has made clear his own unhappiness with the Captain Crozier of the Theodore Roosevelt aircraft carrier, very stupidly, I must say. I can't believe that a president would put himself in that position publicly, but he did so. Maudley, the acting Navy secretary, made a fool of himself over this and then had to walk the plank, as it were. So definitely it did come from the top. There's no question about that. And it has severely compromised the credibility of the Pentagon at this point. It reminds me a little bit of the kind of opposition from the bottom, that is from the rank and file troops that existed during the Vietnam War.
How does this compare to how the influenza epidemic of 1918 affected the military?
I was reminded of the 1918 what they called the Spanish flu pandemic in 1918, but was not from Spain at all, in terms of this emphasis on mission assurance, despite the fact that it was extremely costly in terms of the well-being of the soldiers and sailors that have to bear the brunt of it. The flu pandemic of 1918 killed 50 million people worldwide and killed more U.S. troops going off to World War One and in World War One then were killed by German fire on the ground in France. And the reason was that the chief of staff of the army and General Pershing, who was running the war from France, had agreed to send off nearly 200,000 troops to Europe in troop ships, which were incubators for this influenza epidemic at that point, because of the close quarters that were inevitably being shared by the soldiers who were being sent off to war.
Is Donald Trump a poor copy of the great General Pershing of the modern day, who's going to send our troops off to their own death?
I think you could say that he's a poor copy. That's a pretty good way of putting it, yes. Pershing had no regard for the well-being and the lives of the troops that he was asking to be sent off as reinforcements and whole new units, new divisions to basically try to achieve victory over the Germans. He was tone deaf. He was simply not interested in that issue. And that's the reason why some 63,000 American troops were killed by the influenza epidemic and only 53,000 were killed by the Germans.
Where do you see this heading?
It's difficult to say because we just don't know whether people in the Pentagon are going to learn the lesson from this fiasco of Maudley going on board the ship and giving this stupid talk, attacking the ship's captain, who was a hero of the sailors there, and then having to back down, or whether this is a more fundamental trope that the Pentagon has adopted that they're determined to try to maintain.
Investigative historian and journalist Gareth Porter. And this week marks the 28th anniversary of the war between Serbia and Bosnia that broke out on April 6, 1992. The conflict lasted 3 years. The United Nations said 2.2 million people were displaced and 100,000 killed in the fight, the most devastating war in Europe since the Second World War. The fight ended when NATO forces led by the United States began a bombing campaign against Serbia in 1995. After competing charges of war crimes, trials were held convicting leaders on both sides of the conflict of genocide and crimes against humanity. Serbia and Bosnia have been involved in reconciliation talks since 2004, when the Serbian president apologized for his country's role in the war. And finally, Grammy Award-winning singer John Prine, who Rolling Stone magazine called one of America's greatest songwriters, died from complications of the coronavirus Tuesday at Nashville's Vanderbilt University Medical Center.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven. From your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I got my window shields filled with flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside
And the artist was hospitalized last month after the sudden onset of COVID-19 symptoms, was placed in intensive care for 13 days. A Vietnam-era veteran, he became a sensation on the Chicago folk circuit, influencing artists from Kris Kristofferson to Bob Dylan. John Prine was 73.
No matter what the reason's for, and your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
And that's some of the news for Wednesday, April 8th, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.